It is time for your local newscast for this Monday, November 21st. I'm Steve Cole, live from the heart of Carbondale's Creative District with KDNK News Director Gavin Dahl. Good morning, Gavin.
Good morning, Steve. In a letter to the editor published by the Post-Independent over the weekend, Glenwood Springs attorney Ted Hess suggests ways that local residents can support immigrants in our community. First, he writes, quote, "Make it clear to your elected leaders and police chief or sheriff that you do not want your police to assist ICE in moving against law-abiding immigrants. Local police have no authority to enforce immigration laws," end quote. Carbondale Police Chief Gene Schilling insisted last week that his department is not looking for people to deport. He said immigration status is only relevant when it comes to driver's licenses. Second, attorney Ted Hess points out that schools, hospitals, churches, weddings, and demonstrations are off limits to immigration and customs enforcement. Hess encourages, quote, "reporting ICE officers you see at these types of facilities and functions," end quote. To make a complaint about ICE activity, he says to call 877-246-8253. And third, when undocumented workers are arrested by ICE, attorney Ted Hess suggests helping them post an immigration bond or supporting the worker in immigration court. He recommends attending and testifying at court hearings and writing reference letters. The Movement for Justice for Immigrants in Colorado is led in part by the Colorado Immigrant Rights Coalition, a statewide membership-based coalition of immigrant, faith, labor, youth, and ally organizations that works to improve the lives of immigrants and refugees in Colorado. Local band Let Them Roar have a benefit lined up on December 9th at Carbondale Beer Works for CIRC. If you or someone you know is an immigrant who feels at risk, the American Civil Liberties Union has prepared a Know Your Rights guide in English and Spanish, as well as information on getting help. We will link to the ACLU, the Let Them Roar benefit event, and the letter to the editor by Glenwood Springs attorney Ted Hess on today's local newscast post at KDNK.org. Colorado will be part of a new pilot program to create a digital driver's license. Rocky Mountain Community Radio Network reporter Benta Berkland has more.
According to a Pew Research study, 86% of people aged 18 to 29 have a smartphone. The goal of the two-year project is to target millennials to meet the needs of a diverse group of drivers. Lynn Granger is with the Colorado Department of Revenue.
Anytime that we can, you know, embrace new technology and make things more convenient for our customers and easily accessible, we always aim to do that. So we're excited.
The Department of Revenue isn't sure whether the pilot project would apply to other IDs, such as driver's licenses for undocumented immigrants. Idaho, Maryland, and Washington, D.C. are also participating in the project. The state's driver's license vendor won the federal grant from the National Institute of Standards and Technology. I'm Benta Berkland.
Colorado is known for its iconic 14,000-foot peaks, more often called 14ers. Despite their majestic appearance, these high peaks have a fragile ecosystem, and it takes a considerable amount of effort to keep them in good condition. Before the season ended, Dana Cronin from partner station KRCC in Colorado Springs looked into the world of 14er maintenance and has this report.
That's the sound of a 600-pound rock being put into place as a single step in a staircase leading up to the summit of Mount Columbia. Eli Allen stands at an altitude of almost 13,000 feet, working to position the rock perfectly.
And then I can push this rock further this way, and it will sit flat instead of at a slant. But I've been trying to get this rock out for quite a while, and it's proving really difficult.
Further along the trail, Meg Reeves pushes rocks down a steep slope for use in constructing a wall.
We have to find rocks that we think might work, and then we have to make them fit into where we need them to be.
Allen and Reeves are crew leaders for the Colorado 14ers Initiative, or CFI, a nonprofit founded 22 years ago to help protect and preserve Colorado's high peaks. Lloyd Athern is the organization's executive director.
Working on 14ers is much like a bumper sticker I once saw from an outdoor company where it said, my best vacation is your worst nightmare.
Maintenance crews often wake up around 3 a.m. and hike to their work sites to avoid late afternoon thunderstorms. They work 8-hour days at high altitudes and with heavy equipment. The goal, Athern says, is to build trails that will encourage recreation but also help protect the ecosystem.
if people step on the plant, it can kind of crush their cells. And with some plants, stepping on them as few as 5 to 10 times can kill a plant.
Another organization working to maintain Colorado's 14ers is the Rocky Mountain Field Institute, or RIMFI. The group does maintenance in the Sangre de Cristo Range as well as on Pikes Peak. Jennifer Peterson is the executive director of RIMFI and says their goal is to build sustainable, long-lasting trails.
In 100 years, that trail will still be there. Drainage impacts, environmental impacts will be minimized. The tundra will be protected. And that's what we want.
And she says they certainly have their work cut out for them.
It's hard work. It's slow work. It's expensive work. And there's just truly RIMFI and CFI in the state that are sort of leading the charge on these 14er projects.
I am the peak manager, which I actually prefer to call myself the 14ers program manager, because peak manager, no one knows what that means. And I am 53.
That's Loretta McElhenney. She's with the USDA Forest Service and coordinates with CFI and RIMFI. Her job is to design summit trails and provide the instructions to construction crews for all 14,000-foot peaks in Colorado, about 54 in all. Aside from her seasonal assistant, she's essentially a one-woman show. We met on Mount Elbert because McElhenney says she thinks the most clearly as she hikes. She says the job is time-intensive, but that's fine by her.
I have great passion for this work, and I don't mind putting in the time. Look where I get to be. This is the view from my office. My lunchroom is pretty nice, too.
McElhenney calls the alpine tundra, that's the space above timberline, a magical place. But, she says, it's difficult to balance her love for the delicate environment and her support for public recreation.
If we had all the money in the world and we could harden these routes up the 14er to withstand more and more and more people, it may not break my heart as much to see, because we wouldn't see the resource damage.
However, McElhenney says that's just not the case. Work on any single 14er can cost hundreds of thousands of dollars, with money coming from grants and other donations. CFI's Athern says the agency's budget this year was around $1.1 million to pay about 23 salaries and provide amenities for crews up on the peaks. Despite the cost, Athern doesn't really see an end to the need for 14er maintenance.
We will always be doing 14er stuff until people stop climbing 14ers, which I'm guessing, based on past trends, is not going to end anytime soon.
CFI recently put out a report showing last year there were 260,000 individual hikes taken up the state's 14ers. And after two decades of work, Athern says CFI is only about two-thirds of the way to ensuring every 14er has a sustainable route to the top. For KRCC News, I'm Dana Cronin.
I love hearing stories from our partner stations. Last week, I had the chance to attend the annual Rocky Mountain Community Radio Network Conference. News directors and reporters from a dozen stations met with our State House reporter, Benta Berkland, and talked about opportunities for collaboration and fundraising across the state. We're proud to be members of the network that distributes Capital coverage to public radio stations around Colorado. For KDNK, I'm Gavin Dahl.
The Bureau of Land Management's decision last week to cancel 25 undeveloped oil and gas leases in the White River National Forest drew praise from cattlemen, outdoor enthusiasts, and local governments. Eric Galatis reports.
U.S. Interior Secretary Sally Jewell and BLM Director Neil Kornsey joined Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper yesterday in Denver to announce the final resolution of disputed oil and gas leases, canceling leases in the Thompson Divide area of the White River National Forest. The move was praised by a coalition of ranchers, sportsmen, and local governments. Stacy Bernat, former mayor of Carbondale, says the action puts to rest a decade-long struggle to prevent overproduction on public lands.
The Thompson Divide Coalition in this issue is a wonderful example of perseverance, strange bedfellows coming together to galvanize around a topic that resonates and is backed by sound decision-making.
Agencies analyzed 65 oil and gas leases and, after years of public input, decided to cancel undeveloped sites in the Thompson Divide but keep the area open for agriculture and outdoor recreation. Industry groups called the move an overreach of authority and promised to work with the incoming Trump administration and GOP-controlled Congress to reverse it. According to the BLM, the vast majority of over 50,000 public comments it received supported canceling the leases. Bill Fales with the North Thompson Cattlemen's Association says the BLM and U.S. Forest Service's independent analyses came to the same conclusion.
Both agencies, in analyzing the issue, thought this area had too many other values besides the mineral underneath the ground that needed to be protected. So hopefully politics will stay out of it.
The White River National Forest draws more visitors every year than the Grand Canyon, Yellowstone, and Yosemite National Parks combined. According to BBC Research and Consulting, hunting, ranching, and recreation in the Thompson Divide supports 300 jobs and generates $30 million a year in economic activity. This is Eric Galatis reporting for KDNK.
U.S. Geological Survey geologist Sarah Hawkins will present the results of her recently published report, vastly increasing previous estimates of recoverable natural gas within the Piceance Basin next week on December 1st. The Northwest Colorado Oil and Gas Forum meets at Colorado Mountain College and Rifle at 9 a.m., and the public is invited to attend. Other speakers will include the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, Garfield County, BLM, the Forest Service, and Community Counts. The purpose of the forum is to share information about oil and gas development in Northwest Colorado and to make government officials and oil and gas industry representatives easily accessible to the public. Meetings are co-chaired by COGCC Director Matt Lepore and Garfield County Commissioner Mike Sampson. We do have a winter storm warning in effect starting at 3 p.m. today and forecast through Tuesday evening above 8,500 feet in the Gore and Elk Mountains, Central Mountain Valleys, and the Flat Tops. Could be 6 inches in place, but Vail Pass is expected to get the bulk of the snow. Again, that seems to be where our trajectory is at the moment. Aspen could see maybe a half inch of snow today, maybe an inch of snow tonight, and another half inch tomorrow, but that's in town proper. Hopefully a little more for our local ski areas. We'll wait and see what we get.